Okay, well, welcome back. You see, I found the chair. I also, they very graciously hooked me up to this. What was this called?
iBurst.
And so this is working quite nicely, this iBurst. And I managed to edit my wiki. So the title of this session is, once again, eLearning 2.0. So I'm pretty pleased to be able to do that, and we've got the right city on there too, which is always nice, and the right date. Let's take stock. I know the morning did not go according to plan, but you're waving. Oh, sure. Downs, D-O-W-N-E-S, .jot.com. And there's not a lot on it right now, although there is this page, but I'm going to be using this for something very similar to this a lot more, and I'll explain why a bit later today. Well, you can see why, with my website down. So, first of all, is it all right if I sit here? All right. Great. And it's a bit of a challenge for the people on the camera a bit. Now I'm hiding. Kilroy was here. Oh, man. I forgot. I have at home little eyes with moving pupils. I was going to glue them. I always forget to do that. So, how was the morning session for all of you? Was it okay? Were the topics interesting? Yes? Go right ahead. So, no more anti-trigonometry agitation? I'm glad you asked me that. Of course, it's different now than it was then, right? Because the internet changes things. But yeah, I'm sure you'll recognize this. Let's see. I've just typed in rotated cube. Okay, well, actually I just downloaded the rotating cube applet. It's not really what I had in mind. How about... You see my methodology here? What I'm doing, I just search. How to rotate a cube when any key is pressed. This is Java. I hate Java. I wouldn't program in Java if you paid me. Really, it's just... I have reasons for that. So I'm probably not going to be too good with this, but so now what's going to happen here right now? Again, I'm learning to program, right? If I'm trying to rotate a cube in Java, of all things, I'm going to have some background in the programming, right? I'm going to have some, right? So I got to read this. Simple behavior, it doesn't rotate. Well, that's typical Java for you. I can tell you, I hate Java, but this is why. So I'm going to understand this code here, and actually I even understand enough programming, I have a pretty good idea what's going on anyways, right? Look at this, right? Private double angle, right? So there's an angle variable in all of this. And so I'm studying this, and I'm going to, as I go through it deeper and deeper, depending on my needs, I'm going to hit these foundational things, right? So, the mechanism that is being applied here is that when I need the knowledge, the systems are in place that allow me to find the knowledge quickly. And in fact, what I talked about when I talked about e-learning 2.0 in certain contexts is I talked about you don't even need to do the search. The application that you're working on will already know what you're looking for. Now that's down the road. So you see the difference, right? You're learning trigonometry. I'm going to have to stand because I can't see these hands in the lights. So, oh well, so much. It was nice while it lasted. I'm going to pout for a little while now. I'm all the way to South Africa. What am I going to do? I'm going to pout. All right, it goes on here. See, the one mechanism is you teach people trigonometry just in case they need it. And, you know, so that it's there in their mind, so that they have some knowledge that that's what they need. And the other method is you don't teach things in case they need it, you teach things when they need it. And so it's two very different approaches to learning. The question for those listening on audio was, where do the people skills go for people learning online? Let me tell you all a story. I made this story up. I guess that's the best kind of story. And I first started telling, all my history is in Australia. It's kind of weird. I first started telling this story in Australia, but I've been thinking about this for a long time. Because you're right, right? You know, if there's anything worse than sitting in a classroom all day, except for some weird people like me, it's sitting in front of a computer all day. That's not what we do. It's not what I do, right? That's why I do photography and get out there and look at trees and bushes and things like that. Some people have to go out and look at bushes. Otherwise, why are they there? But, so, I imagine myself in the outdoors quite a bit. And I spend a lot of time in the outdoors. I wouldn't have it any other way. And I don't fish. I used to, when I was a kid, that I fished, and I caught a mud pout once. It's kind of like it's a freshwater fish that is a bottom feeder. And that's the only fish I ever caught. So I thought, this is dumb, and moved on. But there's a lot of people who fish, and they get their fishing rods, and you see, I want to move to the front now. Is that going to mess up your camera? All right, cool. Because this is almost a visual, right? So if you're standing by the river or whatever, because I've never ocean fished, and you've seen people fish, right? And you cast the rod. Now what happens, right? You cast the rod, and the fly goes, and goes whoop into the water, right? And so I'm imagining myself doing this. This is me doing it now. I cast the rod, and my thing goes boink, and lands on a rock. And I'm sort of looking at that, and my fishing rod says to me, "You've never fished before, have you?" My fishing rod recognizes that that was a really bad cast. Anyone would have known that. And the fishing rod can tell, right? Because, you know, a good cast, that line's going to go out a certain distance. It's going to go out at a certain speed, even a certain tension on the line. The arc, right? There's a little GPS inside the fishing rod. The arc, or not a GPS, so what do they call those things? Gyroscopes. Right, a little gyroscope, and so it knows that you didn't do a nice arc like that, but, well, you know, it knew. Because, you know, they're just little sensors, right? The little sensors cost like a tenth of a cent each. Because, you know, they manufacture a billion of them a day, kind of, whatever. And so if you're fishing lots that you have never fished before, you know, once I figure out what's happening, I say, well, no, I haven't. And the fishing rod says, "Would you like me to teach you?" Wow. And notice the locus of control here. I still have the locus of control, right? This is still me deciding, right? The fishing rod, I can dump the fishing rod. And if it gets snarky with me, I will. Because it's a fishing rod, right? But it's offering to teach me. I say, yes. Well, then the fishing rod kicks into action. The fishing rod has wireless internet access. Of course, because everything has wireless internet access. Right? And how hard is it to put one of these in a fishing rod? Right? Now, again, imagine this is 20 years down the line, and this, instead of costing whatever it costs, because I've never seen one, cost $10 for the hardware, and actually, the bandwidth is provided for free. The reason why the bandwidth is provided for free is on the other end of the line are all these people who sell lessons in fishing. And they know they can't sell you the lesson in fishing unless you have access through your fishing rod. So they provide the bandwidth. And they actually make sure there's bandwidth by all the rivers and all the streams and all that. It's not hard. You put up an antenna, it covers like 100 square mile area. No problem. So the fishing rod says, "Would you like me to teach you the fish?" I said, "Sure." Well, I've got my RFID tag, and I might have my mobile or whatever. You know, I've got some electronics on me. So the fishing rod, it connects wirelessly. It says, "Okay, we're going to be teaching someone to fish now." But it also finds out who I am by my RFID tag or whatever. RFID, says it's a little tiny chip about this big, and it goes in clothes or on labels or anything. Goes in this now. And except my personal RFID, all it does is it broadcasts my identity. So it's convenient, because I hate logging in. Right? So I never have to log in. I don't even need to unlock doors anymore, because my RFID is just, you know, just broadcast, not very far. And, you know, we've been all, you know, the big RFID security scare of 2010, where people were able to forge the signature, but no, they got past that. So the fishing rod scans me, discovers who I am, scans the environment, sees what electronics I have on me now. It detects that I have a mobile phone, and it obviously has picked up my RFID. Now the fishing rod says, "Can I access your background in this area?" It asks me for permission to access my records. I say, because it's a voice interface, right? Well, what records are you going to get? Because I'm cautious. And kids these days, they just, "Yeah, go ahead." But, you know, kids know nothing.
That's why you have to regulate the fishing, the educators, because, they'll say, can I teach you to fish? And they say yes, and the kid will say, okay, you can access my stuff, and they access everything they know about science. We don't know what they want with that information, but they do. So the fishing rod accesses my background. It knows that I have a degree in physics, say. I've been busy over the last few years. And so it says, okay, take out your PDA, your mobile, open it up. I take out the PDA, open it up, and, it's on, of course. Batteries are real cheap. And I said, okay. And then now the fishing rod sends a signal to the mobile. Your mobile logs on. It accesses the free net that's here. And now the information pops up and says, okay, look, the first thing you need to do, and it starts to explain to you. And then it might explain to you like for 5 minutes, or it might explain to you for an hour. It depends, right? Depends on me, my learnings, and check my learning. It knows, like, it might know, I like to get the whole story first. Or it might know, look, this guy has never listened to a lesson for more than 30 seconds. Right? So, give him 29 seconds. And it, because it is me, it gives me 29 seconds. Okay, try another cast. So I try another cast. It's interactive. Of course it's interactive. What else would it be? It's pretty dumb to have an electronic fishing rod that's not interactive. Who would make such a thing? Right? So I practice it. Is that better? Okay, you notice the arch. Now think about your trigonometry. Sorry, I just threw that in. You know what I mean? And now the dialogue goes on. Right? And over time, I form a relation with my fishing rod. I told you I could get away with saying anything. My fishing rod's been teaching me to fish for a while, and I've learned to trust my fishing rod. I've learned to trust the educational program. He says, have you tried such and such a fishing hole? I said, no, I've never been there. They said, well, there's so-and-so and so-and-so are going to be out there next Saturday, and they're looking for another person to join them. You guys are pretty compatible. You want to go up there? You Google them. Right. And so, your own website now will go out and Google these other people, check out their blogs, send you some information, send you the links. And, by the time you get out there to that fishing hole with these people that you've never met, you know as much as there is to know about them because there's stuff online. And you see the picture? Where is the locus of control? It is with the learner. Where is the learning taking place? Where it is needed. What is the learning management system? It's whatever I'm using at the time. A fishing rod, a jar of strawberry jam, a microphone, a desk, a chair. You get a brand new chair from the store. The chair says, would you like me to show you how to operate? And I said, you're a chair. You want a couple of controls. They do that. You probably have controls like that. Yeah. I remember chairs, look at this. You see, I can't operate a chair anymore. Now I can't find the controls. Controls. Just so I can't operate a chair.
Okay. I want my chairs to teach me. And that's the picture. Right? And so, you're asking me now, how do I break that? And that's why I kind of react the way I do. Just, you're asking me, how do I get somebody at the other end of the fishing rod to force you to fish for pike and not muskie?
I think, if I can explain it for me, you would also take out that African situation into account. If you look at, I used to get the meter in business education. And you cannot give our students this kind of freedom. And if you don't integrate technology into your curriculum design, it will be as students from our IT director always said, this thing is also a tool. But if I leave the tool on the desk, it is useless. I must know what is the possible user for this thing, and I must apply it in an appropriate manner in my situation. And if you think international, you know, conference and business presentation, when TV came about, people preach that it will be the end of speeching, classroom speeching. You know, you can go to all the technologies, when computers came around, CD-ROMs, DVDs, internet, I think it was very interesting. And there's one guy in at that conference said, it's so very interesting that we are attending a conference on the World Wide Web, that we are on a face-to-face session. Why are we not arranging our conference on the World Wide Web in a virtual fashion? Some of us are in Canada, some of us are in Joburg, and to interact face-to-face. Why do we still have the need for a face-to-face conference about World Wide Web?
Okay, again, for the audio, a few things there. The first comment, you know, we can't give them that amount of freedom because the students won't learn. The pen just left on the table doesn't do anything. You have to have the pen in your hand to know what you can do with the pen. And then the question or the comment was made, why, if we're talking about learning on the web, do we have somebody in person like this? And those are all good issues. I'll deal with the last one first. The web, everybody assumes, the web will replace, society. And, frankly, that's silly. And it's silly because, again, if I'm in control of my life, I am not going to voluntarily stop seeing other people. That's an important part of my life. And to create the communication, to create the context, and it's not simply, people have this idea of communication for sending a signal, right? It's just the information, and there are different channels, that's why we have video, right? So you can see my gestures and all of that. But it isn't just that. Communication is incredibly complicated. And you know this. I don't need to tell you this. And even like me doing this. You saw the way I did that before, right? And that's a message. I'm saying things like that, right? The way I relate to all of you, right? I talk differently in person than I ever would on the web. Question, right? Okay, well, why would you bring me? Okay, but now we have this talk, we have this conversation, and I might talk tomorrow, and I might chat with some of you during the breaks. Now there's some kind of relation has been established. Right? There was a relation with a number of you before who had seen my stuff on the web. Now we all have a relation. Now what happens is I go back home. Before the web, that'd be it. Right? I'd go back home. You never see me again. Really, I mean, how often do I get to Africa? Right? But with the web now, I go back home, but our conversation continues. Not all of you. There is guaranteed one person in this room who utterly hates this possible part. Yes, that happens. I've learned to live with that. But there are other people who like the talk. There are some people who just passionately disagree with me. There are other people who like me. It's like finding the people out there who share your interests, who share your beliefs, who share your goals, right? And now we can keep communicating. The personal contact is a dimension, right? And it's a dimension none of us will ignore. But here's the flip side. And I first read this in a book by Douglas Rushkoff called Siberia, C-Y-B-E-R-I-A. And he had a lot of interesting things to say in that book. But one of the things he said is, he wrote this, in the 1990s, and he said, if you work in the internet, be prepared to spend a lot of time on airplanes. Exactly backwards. But he's right. Because, think about it. Before the internet, none of you would have heard of me, ever. Not a chance. Wouldn't have happened. And I would never have communicated with any of you. I never would have come here. we never would have started our dialogue. Now, because of the internet, I get to meet people all over the world, and at some point during my life, and usually it's only like once or twice in my whole life, I get to travel and meet another person. And that's the thing that the web is replacing. Right? You and I, nothing personal, you and I might never ever see each other again. That's reality. There's 6 billion people on the planet. What are the odds, right? Frankfurt. Oh, yeah, I didn't know how you said it. So, and so we get our connection here. If there is any connection, we get it personally, because that's how humans connect. But the web keeps that alive. Now, the freedom thing. Not just the South African context. People always think, yeah, it's unique to us, but I mean, I hear this in the United States, I hear this in Canada, I hear it in Europe, right, everywhere. Right. We cannot give our students or in a company, our staff, right, or, you know, if I'm talking to university administrators, it's our professors, that much freedom. Because, and then there's always some variation, right, they will abuse it, or they will not do what we want them to do, or whatever, right? There's always some variation of that sort of thing. And my response is, what is the evidence for that? Right? Okay, yeah. If people have freedom, then they don't do what you tell them to do anymore, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. Right? And what you need to do is show, and I contend nobody has shown this, that giving people freedom is a bad thing. And the problem is, and because we encounter this all the time, you know, grade six teacher, they try it and say, okay, I'll try it, right? And I go into the class and say, okay, today, you're going to do whatever you want to do. And 2 minutes later, class is empty. And, you know, there's two kids running off to the forest. There's three kids downtown at the drugstore. And, you know, like, it just doesn't work. But the thing is, You've got these kids, grade six, they spent a lifetime being told what to do, and then you say, okay, now do whatever you want to do, and, you know, I mean, this doesn't happen automatically. And this is why I like these new technologies so much, is because they do allow people, beginning at a very young age, to take responsibility for themselves, for some aspect of their lives. It's their blog page. It's their MySpace site. It's their SMS address. Right? And so, even today, even as we speak, there is a generation growing up, and indeed in this country, and in my country, and in Europe, and Australia, and even in New Zealand, there's a generation growing up that has learned in some parts of their life to be free. And free in a way that we've never had anywhere on the planet. And you know, I sometimes think of myself as, you know, the first wave of that, because, you know, I was so weird in school, so I got all these tools, and, hey, freedom, hey, cool. Yeah. Look what I can write and not get caught. You know, and we're seeing these waves now, these waves of creativity wash across the web, and, you know, I am sometime today going to show you some of these things, because I think you should see them. Although, if you don't want me to, I won't. Yeah, you know, there's no upside to me controlling you guys. So, you know, I mean, again, it's your session. So, but you know, I'm going to recommend it, because, you know, being free, and this is another myth, right? Being free does not mean completely aimless and directionless. Right. Imagine, as I did 2 days ago, I went to Frankfurt for the first time. I didn't actually intend to go to Frankfurt, but there I was. And, you know, I'm completely free to do whatever I wanted to do. What did I do? I looked at a map and let the map tell me what to do. So here's this inanimate object that they plunked in the middle of the city telling me what to do. But it's okay, because, you know, I choose to accept these directions. And so that's the balance, right? With the freedom, you have to have the support, the resources, the I'm looking for a word, something like affordances, or there's a fancy word for it. But, pardon?
Scaffolding.
No, well, scaffolding, but scaffolding, that term has been, as used in the educational context, always sort of seems to imply this direction, you know, directed kind of learning. But yeah, in an educational context, scaffolding is sort of similar to what I mean, right? In my context, in the context of online learning, it means the systems and mechanisms like Blogger that give people the ability to write something easily on the web, or Flickr to post their photographs, or podcasting for their audio, or YouTube for their video, and all of those sorts of things, and put these things into place, and then or phishing laws to talk to them, right? So freedom by itself is not enough, but you know, I mean, to me, the freedom is the essential first thing, and then if you really want people to be responsible in their freedom, then you make sure the supports are in place. Well, people, you know, this may sound off topic, but it isn't, I think. I think this is directly on this topic. Because for some reason that escapes me, I do get asked about educational policy. And they say to me, well, you know, you've done this work and all that, you know, all this internet stuff, you know, and online learning, and you've written papers and that. How do we improve the outcomes, the educational outcomes, for our children in our schools? And they say this to me in Canada. I look at them, I say, feed them. And they go, what? Look at your data, I tell them. Even in Canada, right? The number one predictor of improved educational output is nutrition. Right? If you had free hot lunches in the schools in Canada, you'd get your educational improvement you're looking for. So don't buy computers. Buy them food. And they look at me like I've lost my mind. Right? But, I mean, they asked, how do you improve education? Right? It's this thing, there's a teacher, right? And, you know, the teacher says, well, how do you improve education? And the teacher's expecting, well, you use some pedagogy. And I said, feed them. Right? And they don't come back. So I only ever get to say it once. So I have to be convincing when I say it. But again, the principle is, if you give them or make accessible, you don't even need to give it, just make accessible the resources that they need, food being one of those, they will learn. And in fact, and John Stuart Mill said this, the reason why they're not learning is not because they're stupid. It's not because they're unwilling. It's not because they're lazy or whatever, says John Stuart Mill. The reason why is because there is no system in place that allows them to do this. The system actually is set up to stop them from learning. And that was in the late 1800s in Britain. Still the same situation there. Still the same schools. Still some of the same teachers. For all of you in Britain who just heard that, sorry. But you know what I mean? And so, people, when they ask me, what is your educational theory and all that, and, you know, I say, well, look, I'll get to the theory, and there is a theory. Although nobody will ever credit me with having a theory. It's pretty simple and straightforward. But really, before we get to that, let's look and see, do they have the things and what they need? Okay, they need to be fed, preferably clothed. Strictly speaking, that's optional, depending on what country you're in. Housed, perhaps, you know. And, you know, having the internet access is important. In Canada, we set up a program called the Community Access Program. And what that was is, in every town and every village in the country, we set up a place with computers, two, three, whatever, computers, connected to the internet. And most of they ended up in a town library or a community center. Some of them ended up in schools. And the way we set up this program was, you know, we didn't go in and put computers there. So we'll give you these computers and we'll give you the internet access. This is the Government of Canada speaking. if you tell us what your plan is. Because we're not going to run this for you. Who has the time? Right? But we just want to know what you're going to do with them. Right? You know, and, you know, how are your computers going to be managed? Right? You know, and different communities, they did it different ways. One community, the Chamber of Commerce, managed it. Right? And they used it to try to promote business for the town. And another community, they sort of had a community group of some people from the church, some people from the school, some youth representatives, and they managed it. And, you know, and the location varies. But the idea here is that the resource was put into the community, and then they would decide what to do with it. And so e-learning 2.0 is the resources are put in place to let people do what they would naturally do if only given the chance. And that is to learn, to create, to be part of a society, to be part of a community. Everybody does this naturally. You know, people say, how do you get kids to learn? I tell them, well, your kids are learning all the time anyways. Right? That's what human brains do. You cut open the human brain, I don't recommend it. But if you did, it's full of neurons. And the neurons are all connected to each other. And the way these neurons work is they take experience that comes in and they recognize patterns. And the neurons connect to each other. And that's learning. That's what learning is. Nothing more. It's real simple. This is what kills me. Learning is so simple. Neurons connecting to each other. Nothing more. And they do that automatically. Well, provided they have adequate nutrition, which is why you have to feed them, right? Because human brains need food and water and beer. And so the question is not, how do you get them to learn, you know, but rather, you know, how do you make it the case that they'll learn something useful to them instead of learning something useless? And now, of course, you know, and our temptation is always to say, and we know what is useful. But, you know, and that's where we make the mistake, right? They know what's useful to them. And they need to have these things in place. And if they have these things in place, they will learn something useful. They can have experiences. They can create things, right? And that's what creates the learning. If they don't have these things in space, they stare at the sky, they twiddle their thumbs because there is no internet, there is no learning, there's nothing. And so their learning is, the sky is blue. And they know that really, really well. And that's it, because that's all the experiences that they could have. So you put the stuff into place. E-learning 2.0 is putting the stuff into place. And this is why you can do it in your classroom. Right? Because you can keep doing what you're doing and fool the principal and the school board. Right? And on the side, really, it doesn't take any effort to, on the side, say, oh, and hey, kids, don't tell anyone. This is a blogger. All right? And, you know, kids, you know, I know you like blogger, but, you know, when you're doing your paper, don't go to Wikipedia, but don't cite it because, you know, people will complain, but here's where you can find all the links to the references you need. Right? But don't tell anyone. And so now they've got a place that they can write. Now they've got a free encyclopedia, and it just goes from there. And that's the theory. And then the third part is the actual pedagogical theory. And the pedagogical theory, again, I will never get credit for having a pedagogical theory, and that's fine. And that is model the learning. Do be what you want your students to do and be. Because students learn by neurons connecting. And the neurons connect according to what they see and what they experience. You see something, whing, neuron connects. If you see somebody acting free, you act free. If you see somebody giving orders to someone, you give orders to someone. That's how learning works. And, you know, and you can talk about all the pedagogy in the world, and there's a lot of it is like trying to come up with shortcuts. But there isn't. There's no shortcut. If you want to learn something better, you do it more often. how, you know, like, I'm sometimes, again, who knows why, thought of as a good speaker. But the only way to become a good speaker, and trust me, I know this, is to do it. I started speaking in public in grade 5. Nobody forced me, but, you know, there was a competition, and, you know, I figured I could win it. I did. And so it's one of these things, and then over time, when I was in university, I was on the Graduate Students Association, and there was this book that crossed my path one day, and it was called How to Speak Without Notes, or something like that. It was by a guy called Keith Spicer, S-P-I-C-E-R. It's no longer in print, but you can get used copies from Amazon. It's kind of weird. I always recommend it, but you can't get it anymore. Spicer, interestingly, was once the head of the Canadian Radio Telecommunications Commission, but I think his book was much better work. And it was just how to speak without notes, right? I mean, just simple ways of planning what you're going to say, right? And again, you know, because, you know, practice doing it creates the need. The need was created because I wanted to do it better. And then demonstrating, the first time I went to speak without notes was at a convocation. So there's an audience of about 4,000 people in the Nate Jubilee Auditorium. All the graduates are there, and I'm coming up, and I'm speaking without notes. And that's, you know, like pushing the bird out of the nest and hoping you don't crash. But the thing is, I thought about it, and okay, I'm speaking in front of this crowd of 4,000 people without any notes. What happens if it goes badly? Well, nothing. And you look at it that way, it becomes a bit of a no-brainer, doesn't it? And so I realized the best lesson, because, you know, when you speak at a graduation, you're supposed to, you know, have one last crack at the graduates before they leave, right? And so the best lesson I could give them was to be, you know, to be out there on the edge, winging it, flying without a net, taking the risk, you know. And then, of course, I also, while I was speaking, I slammed the university, the administration, the government. And halfway through my talk, it threw me off because the crowd got up on their feet and applauded. And that's what you do. That's how you teach people. And I defy anyone to prove that that's false. What would the evidence for that be? And we're going to have to stop because we have to stop existing for a moment. So you can change your tape now. How long is it before lunch, please? I don't know what time it is.
1:15.
11:45, okay. Well, okay, here's a question for you. I should wait. I'm sorry. We're away? Okay. Here's what I'm doing today to prove what I believe. Like I said, I went to Colombia. I went to Colombia about 4 weeks ago. I've never been to Colombia. I've never been to South America. And so it was kind of an interesting challenge for me. And I took my trusty camera. I bought this in Phoenix, Arizona 3 years ago. It took every cent I had and a lot that I didn't have. And I smuggled it across the border into Canada. Actually, I think it was under the limit. Yes, it was under the limit. I was not breaking any laws when I brought it into Canada. And it's a nice little camera. I've taken a lot of photographs with it. And when you go to my website, notice how I said that. When you go to my website, when it's working, you'll be able to see my photographs. And another thing it does is it has a video mode, and it takes really bad 45-second clips of video. So... And I went to Columbia, I took 900 photographs, because it's a digital camera, right? They're free. And because I have the video, I take a bunch of videos. And I got back to Canada, and, you know, issues of control, right? NRC administration, in its wisdom, decided that I really shouldn't be working in e-learning anymore. I should be working in real-time broadband video conferencing. Now, and I actually have done that in the past, but I've decided that that's not a good way to go. And the reason why I've decided that it's not a good way to go is because it's staff-intensive. That means if you're doing, like, classes over a video conference, you still need the teacher at the other end all the time. And teachers are expensive. So it's not really going to scale. And also, too, it's the same old education of delivering content, right? So anyhow, but they want me to work in the video. So I'm sitting there in my office saying, oh, okay, how do I do this and subvert their intent and still do what I want to do? And I decided, oh, I'll make a video. What? Video? Kind of. So I don't know how to make a video, right? I've taken some of these little clips. So I had bought Adobe Premiere Elements. It cost me about $90, which again was way more than I should have wanted to pay, but that's what it cost me. $90 is roughly 540 rand. Is that right? No, it isn't right. 9 times 6, yeah, that's 540 rand, give or take. So, yeah, you know, it was within an order of magnitude. So I have Adobe Premiere. I know nothing about video production. But I decided about 4 weeks ago, I'll make a video. And so I just opened up the program and just started playing with it. It has a help, and it's not a very good help because it's Microsoft Help. And Microsoft Help is famous for not really being any help, but it was there. And, you know, again, just this is a bit of a side, but yeah. Why aren't Microsoft products like my fishing rod? Right? The Microsoft products is at least connected to the internet. We know that because it's always sending reports back to Microsoft. Right? Couldn't it like bring some of the information the other way to help me? Oh, anyhow, end of the story. So, and that's what I did. The last 4 weeks, I was supposed to be writing a personnel review for myself so I'd get promoted, and I was supposed to be working on this simultaneous video conferencing that I'm learning to make my video. And that's the video that I want to show you. And the thing is, it's the taking control of your own learning, and it's expressing the learning and being creative, and also being stubbornly independent and not being like being told what to do. So I was planning to show it to you at lunch, but I think it might work better just before lunch, and that way you can have your whole lunch. Again, it's not the world's greatest video, but I don't know. What do you guys think about that? Okay, some in the back of it. Anything to get them off the stage. I'm just kidding. You guys have all been really supportive. Yeah, like that's why, you know, I like, you know, because I never know whether I'm right when I'm talking my theories and that. I always try to gauge the reaction and, you know, do people see the logic? Do people see the reasoning? And so I really like this sort of setup because I can look around at all of you, and unless I'm really misreading you, it could be, you know, cross-cultural context. I've misread people in cross-cultural context before. That's how I got this scar. All right, I'll show you my video. And remember, this is my very first attempt to make a video without a class, no classes, completely self-taught. Nobody told me to do it. In fact, if I had told them, they would have told me not to do it. And, you know, and the video itself may be naive and all of that, but I'm very proud of it. And that's why I want to show it to you. So, and does it make sense to leave the recorder on? No. So I'm going to turn off the sound recording. So those of you who are in audio, listening in audio, go back to the website. There will be a link to this video because I'm hoping to might get to this in this talk. talk about Google Video and uploading video, which is a fascinating subject. And also, I want to take advantage of the bandwidth that I have, because I'll never get it uploaded otherwise. I'm very sneaky that way. So check for the URL on the website where you found this audio file, and you can join us after we finish with the video. So I'm going to stop the recording now.